now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Hi, I'm Jane Garvey.
And I'm Fee Glover.
Off Air with Jane and Fee is going live.
We are taking to the stage at the amazing Crucible Theatre in Sheffield on Friday, the 31st of May.
It'll be a night full of surprises. We'll have a special guest, we'll involve you in the audience, and we'll embarrass ourselves. You really won't want to miss it.
Well, the surprise is we don't yet know what's in it, so it genuinely is a night of surprises.
Well, you've surprised me already. It's not just us. Our live show is part of an exciting new podcast festival called Crosswires, which is taking place in some really amazing venues across Sheffield from the 31st of May to the 2nd of June.
So other podcasters that you'll be able to see include Katie Price, Catherine Ryan, Ramesh Ranganathan and the original Adam Buxton. But there's also a whole host of free fringe events, family shows, surprise acts and after parties that Jane and I haven't yet been invited to.
I'm sure it's only a matter of time. Head to crosswires.live for tickets and more information.
Hello and welcome to our latest international edition of The Ruck. I'm Alex Lowe and I'm sitting at home in Surrey. I'm with Stuart Barnes. Barnesy, where are you?
Still in England, Alex. Still getting to grips with the defeat of our brave boys against Italy, but we'll get there.
My household has not been a happy place. I've had 10-year-olds and 8-year-olds in tears, having to scrub face paint off themselves before going to school this morning.
You sent them to school this morning? That's pretty cruel.
Yeah, well, hang on, who's that?
Whoa, mystery. So this is me, Owen. I'm on the seaside in South Africa. How about that?
Oh, and who's that looming figure next to you in the shadow I can see on my screen?
It's Steve. I'm sorry I'm in the shadow, yeah. We had so much sun, we finally got into the shade. It's just been too warm here. It's been too warm. But we have had problems. We're not short of problems on this trip. Every game seems to have been rearranged three times. There's so many COVID running rampant. But today, the country's at a standstill. And Joburg, where we have been, was a subject of rioting because everybody is out, especially Zulu persuasion, defending the indefensible Jacob Zuma, who's just been imprisoned. Not for all his offences, but for contempt of court. And the whole country, at least in the Zulu areas and Joburg, is almost at a standstill. So just a couple more problems just for us to sort.
Well, but you scarped out of town before that erupted, did you?
Yeah, Jones is also distressed because his sandcastle on the beach was rubbish just now.
But the good news is that last night, the president, the Honourable Cyril Ramaphosa, while reflecting the bad statistics of COVID down here, opened up the restaurants. So he's not a bad man at all, that Ramaphosa.
Did he do it in time for you all to get together and watch the football?
We possibly anticipated his move last night.
Yeah, we broke the booze ban in advance of lifting it.
But we knew he was going to lift the booze ban, so we were okay.
Steve, didn't Cyril Ramaphosa made all his money running the franchises of McDonald's in South Africa? Does he still maintain that? Has that anything to do with the lift of the ban?
He did actually say that every McDonald's can open, but not nowhere else.
not Burger King.
no Burger King, of course.
I like where you're going with that, Barnsley. That's proper journalism. Actually, Jonesy, the booze ban's not been lifted, is it?
It hasn't been lifted.
So we broke it. We broke it in some style to celebrate England not winning.
Should I tell you something? I really feel for England, and what the England football defeat shows is the awful score settling of people from minor countries such as Wales, because the bitterness with which and the glee which they inflict on anything which happens in England that is the slightest bit ill or bad is just pathetic. They ought to grow up.
Well, that's told you. If you had to name five British Lions rugby players to take your penalties, who would they be?
Owen Farrell.
Yeah.
Dan Bigger.
Conor Murray.
Yeah.
Well, the one's obvious to me, Ian Henderson. Take a big run, smash it, take the goalkeeper and the ball through the back of the net.
The Harry Maguire tactic.
Yeah, exactly.
Elliot Daly can do anything. He's just a part-time professional rugby player before he becomes a professional footballer or golfer. Or
he takes his penalty from the halfway line, though, doesn't he?
Yeah, nice. Surely Kyle Sinclair gets a go because he used to fancy himself as a footballer.
Seriously, though, Barnsley and I always argue about experienced players. How can you give three kids three adjacent or adjoining penalties? I just think that was wrong. I don't care what they look like in training. In training, it's not the same. They shouldn't have put those four, three kids up.
And it ended in disappointment, but it had been a brilliant journey through that tournament. I would just love that. I love that championship. I love the tournament. I thought that England team, all other national teams in Britain can look at that England team and what they represent and how they carry themselves and how they represented their sport and their country. I just thought it was brilliant. And it ended on a really down note, but actually fair play to those three kids for stepping up and they'll be stronger for it in the World Cup. And I just hope that everyone gets behind them. We don't have any, we've had some hideous and ridiculous online fallout, but as a nation, I think everyone gets behind them because we've just loved the journey.
And Arthur's really on one today, isn't he? Lovely stuff. We should end this podcast now. That was great stuff.
Boys, can you just tell the guys doing the football podcast, they don't need to bother now. We've already done it for them.
In football, Steve, well, we've got an unpleasant minority of fans, a small minority.
Leave Arsenal out of this.
Yeah, and Saka. It broke my heart to see an Arsenal man miss a penalty, and it wasn't his fault. You're all right there, but football does have that horrible little minority, and wouldn't it help if Southgate and Kane or whoever were just sort of making a small point of saying, hey, first of all, congratulations to someone who's not English. I think that would help hugely in all sport. And if it's a loss, them saying the same thing.
Do you know, I can just imagine the scene now. Bath have just lost to Leicester Tigers in the sensational Pilkington Cup final. Stuart Barnes comes up to the mic and said, Dean, congratulations on your marvellous victory. I can just imagine it now. Well done. Embrace me, Dean Richards, says Captain Barnes.
Right, there is an old clip that goes, do as I say, not as I do. Fair point, Steve.
Guys in South Africa on the rugby theme, what's the latest from out there? What's happening?
The latest news is Gatland's announced a team to play on Wednesday. They're playing against a South Africa A team, which we think will be by far the strongest opposition so far. And the real news on the team sheet is that Dan Bigger is selected at 10, having played at 10 only on Saturday. We know Finn Russell's injured. So where's Owen Farrell? Question mark. He's not on the bench either. We were tipped off that Owen Farrell had was carrying some sort of an injury. The Lions have sort of suggested that he doesn't, but clearly he's not completely right. So we'll have to find out a bit more about that. So maybe Marcus Smith is covering for not just one injured 10, but two.
Conor Murray starting the game, guys, as captain. Dan Bigger, seen by many, including myself, as the test 10. Don't you think that these two, it's going to be an hour with the Lions half-backs and that'll be it, cotton wool, until the first test?
I do, and I think that's how it'll work out, but I don't think it was intended this way. You'd have had Farrell on the bench, wouldn't you? If for no other reason, because you could have played for half the game or some of the game with Murray, Bigger, and then Farrell at 12, if they're still thinking of that.
Yeah.
Amongst the rest of the team, I think that the four wings are all going brilliantly. Okay, some of the tries may have been run-ins. I think it's interesting that Watson is at fullback because when he got going in the second half, the guy, when he gets into the game, it's so good. Sometimes he just rests out there. And I think that it's an interesting move to get all the wings in. Rhys Ammit and Josh Adams are playing on the wing against the South African A team. But Duane van der Merwe he's cruising around South Africa. So Watson at fullback is interesting. Chris Harris, I think, is now outside centre and will stay there. I agree with the halfbacks. Also in the back row, I think it's a massive game for Tom Curry. There's been a lot of publicity about other players, but I think Gatland would love to pick him, and I think this is his seminal game on Wednesday in Cape Town.
And Bundy Aki, has he played every game or virtually every game?
Feels like it, doesn't it?
It does feel like it.
He hasn't played. He hasn't played 10 yet. but yeah, he does seem the guy that they always have to call up because, well, Henshaw's injured. I mean, Daly's played, keeps on playing. Harris is having to double up on Wednesday because of Henshaw. It's sort of I'm not sure it exposes. I don't know. Don't know if we can say it's a weakness yet. But Gatland did pick a much smaller squad than he did for New Zealand 4 years ago, and we're kind of seeing what comes with that, which is players having to double up like this, which, you know, arguably not really what's required.
Stuart, I'll ask your about your opinion. Bundy Aki, great lad, Bundy, big lad. Is he a test centre potentially?
I mean, the only argument is that South Africa are so overtly physical. He too is overtly physical that it's a horses for courses case. But no, I don't see him there. I've always thought Henshaw, I like Henshaw more at 12 alongside his 10 than I do at 13. And I think Harris, Chris Harris was my 13 before the Lions set off on this tour. And he just, I mean, I'm not too worried about what I'm seeing in the games, but Harris was a bloke with a lower profile and he's gone into the rarefied atmosphere of being a Lion and has looked very comfortable. So to me, it's Henshaw and Harris playing, you know, Harris playing with Murray and Bigger interests me as well. And I think, as Owen said, if Farrell comes back, he probably will cover 10 and 12, although I think the plan was initially for Russell to be the cover to change a game if the Lions are struggling. Farrell doesn't change a game any more than Bigger. So the Smith thing is interesting. He, you know, maybe for the second test, he could be a real shot in the 23. But right now, yeah, Aki to me looks like a bloke doing a huge amount of work, being a tour hero, taking the hits, getting the bruises for the part of the team, but don't really see him being in the test team.
Barnsley, one of the conversations that we've been having out here, and I know you sort of touched on it in one of the columns you've written, is we've seen some really good rugby from particularly the wingers. As Jonesy was saying, Duane van der Merwe looks absolutely brilliant at the moment. But what is the value of a really outstanding looking performance against the opposition they've had? And do you know, to what extent should Gatlin be swayed by what he's seen rather than what he saw in the Six Nations, for instance?
Good question.
He shouldn't consider what's happening on this tour. I think he's walking into a trap, if I may graciously disagree with Steve. The box would love nothing more than Duane van der Merwe to play. He's playing against weak opposition. He is beautifully balanced. He's powerful. He's playing brilliantly. But Faf de Klerk would not want nothing more than the chance to kick on him and to turn him on his head. And, you know, what is happening at the moment has got nothing whatsoever to do with test matches. Josh Adams is an absolute cert. He's got a great aerial game, scoring tries. He's a really good player. And, you know, in my view, it's Anthony Watson who is the diffuser of de Klerk on the right wing. You know, I can't knock anything Duane van der Merwe has done, but I really think South Africa would love to see the Lions pick him for their first Test 15.
Do you think they feel the same about Rhys Ammett? I mean, he's looked good and he's obviously got a weapon that no one else has, but they would love to explore that, put the high ball over his head, wouldn't they?
I think, with Watson coming to the form, as Steve mentioned, Watson looking sharp, Adams and Liam Williams, that is the back three. You have to play South Africa, kick it, their set piece and kicking to get pressure and territory is the essence of their game. So the back three are more important against South Africa than they are against New Zealand or Australia. Therefore, you say, how do we defuse what's coming at us from South Africa? We know it is going to come. And you've got to say, you know, it's not as if Watson and Adams aren't good going forward. Williams is the lead man of the full-backed aerially. It looks. I would be very surprised if Gatland doesn't pick that 50, that trio, and I'd be very surprised if he hasn't already penciled them in.
Do you think Gatland's also working to a plan in that, you know, as you said, Bundyaki's played at virtually every game. Chris Harris played at 12. He's only used twin playmakers as a sort of second half option. Do you think there's any case that he's building up to selling a dummy to the box that they prepare for one thing, and then he picks Bigger and Farrell for the test match?
I think it's a very good point you're making, Alex. I don't think that your example will eventuate, but there is no question that this Lions team are nobody's fools, and behind the scenes, they are not giving any credence to their own performances in these matches. I mean, Ken Owen said last week, yeah, he says that they were hard originally because they were at altitude and the guys were knackered, but they know exactly what they're doing. Again, one thing we heard is they've got this ferocious scrummaging session where they do 15 to 20 second scrums, and Ken Owens was telling us about that. Stuart, I agree with what you're saying about Duan, etc., but I think that Gatland is nobody's fool, and I think he's looking past these games directly into the test series and is planning, and the team are planning to really come out blasting when the test starts. It's simple as that. So I wouldn't say that they're great so far, but I think they've got possibilities.
When you asked Warren about what he learned from his experience as an assistant coach in 2009 on that Springbok tour, and the one thing he said consistently for 2 years now is, we went into that first test undercooked. The Lions in 2009 thought they were ready for what was coming, and then what was coming was 3, 4, 5 ratchets up on the physicality scale. Mm-hmm. The scrum got monstered by the Beast in that first test. Phil Vickery had a horrible day. They just weren't ready. They were knocked off their stride. If you remember, they fell behind and actually did well to rally. Mike Phillips led a rally. Tom Croft scored. But they weren't ready for it. And that's what you're saying, Steve, about they're not placing too much credence on these games against weak opposition. The standards are having to be set internally so that, because they do know what will come in that first test. Mm. And Gatlin has not forgotten how that felt in 2009.
The thing is, Alex, if any team's going into this series undercooked, it's not going to be the Lions this time. It's going to be the Springboks. Well, they haven't trained for a week. Half their players are still in isolation. They have only had one test match since their World Cup victory 20 months ago. That was against Georgia. They'll go into test week trying to get their fitness back, let alone trying to work out how they're going to play together. I mean, I think this is an extraordinary series for a million and one reasons. But one is, it's not the Lions who are scrabbling to get a team together in time for the test series. It's the other way around.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on. Settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books. Contacts. Calendar. Double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
The Lions play South Africa A this week. when do we know their team?
By the time this podcast comes out, the South Africa A team will have been named, and we're expecting a number of sort of frontline first choice box. I'm pretty sure that Fath de Klerk and Cheslin Kolbe are going to play. I think they're using it. You know, it was slated as an A game to try and, you know, give what you might call their A team or their B team a chance to play the Lions. But now it's really a warm up game for as many of the box who are on their feet as possible.
Someone like Pollard, who has played so little rugby in France because of injury, you know, he's absolutely key to them. But can you protect him to the extent that he'll have played no serious rugby of any note and then go into a line?
Pollard was one of the guys who tested positive Tuesday last week. So he's got 10 days out. So I can't see how they can pick him for
what you're saying is a very good point. And frankly, I thought it was an evens call when the Lions flew out to South Africa. I think with the COVID decimating the Springboks training camp, the Lions become favourites because, you know, I've been saying all along, I think the matches are red herrings. Everything is going to happen behind the scene. Now, the Lions can have those enormous scrummaging sessions. The Lions can batter each other as far as hard as they want. South Africa can't do that, as the point you've wisely made, Owen. And therefore, they couldn't play Georgia. They can't play one another. They haven't played any rugby since the World Cup. Lions have to be favourites now. Have to.
There's one other thing, away from the tactical arena, which Wise, Owen and I have been talking about with the lads here, and that is that it has been, in many ways, an absolute shambles of a tour. We're at the stadium. We're all ready to go. We've done our COVID tests as journalists, but we don't even know if the team's coming along and the match is on. I mean, it is such an unbelievably rare certainty that there's a game this Wednesday and we know where to go. There are massive privations out here. We've managed to sneak a drink or two, but we hardly, living the life of Riley. The Lions are just in their rooms sort of thing. And what we think is that people at home will say, oh, this is a farce, bring the Lions back, and the COVID is dangerous. But actually, from where we are, and I'm not getting involved in any cause here, there's a certain heroism in what they're doing. They are finding every bloody way possible to get the matches on. Now, it may be like the charge of the light brigade, but the closer you are, in my opinion, to what's happening, the more you think, come on, boys, yeah, let's keep them going and let's get the series on if we can. I mean, at home, that appears to be not the case.
Do you get a sense of that, Stephen Owen, that sort of sense of collective determination when you talk to the coaches and the players? Because back in the Six Nations, the England players, who were in a very strict bubble, were a bit disgruntled with it, with the lack of freedom they had and how strict all the rules were. And that was cited as one of the factors that led to England's poor performance. I mean, admittedly, other countries were also restricted, but England did seem to have a harsher bubble. But this time, what do you sense is different with these players that's giving them the sort of the motivation to attack this challenge rather than feel inhibited by it?
I think it really is the sort of the history and the whole magic of being a Lion and the shirt, and they've been preaching it, and I'm not saying that as if they don't believe it, but the way that this tour has been sold to them is it's going to be a strange tour, it's going to be an uncomfortable tour, but if we all pull together and get through it, then we can be Lions again, and that message is working. They're still following that. Now, the time that it could crack is when you get closer to the test matches, and half of them are no longer playing. And there are no more midweek games, which is different to previous tours. Once we get to this Saturday, the midweekers won't have a game for 3 weeks and they've got to remain on tour. So at that point, you might see this great sort of band of brother thing, that the cracks might appear in it. But at the moment, they still mean it. And it is different to England. You're right, Alex. During the Six Nations, we did get a sniff that they were pretty miserable in their camp. But this lot has still got it held together.
I think there's another difference, and the difference is Eddie Jones and Warren Gatland. Warren Gatland is much more pastoral. He's much more of a got much more humanity about him. there's no question. I mean, they were telling us what the hell happens to the boys who are in their room all day. They said, well, we go out to them, shout at them through the window, sort of thing. You know, there is a real togetherness. Of course, it all falls down. We said there was a togetherness in 1993, only to find that the last few midweek games, only Stewart was trying for the Lions. But
well done, Barnsley.
Well done, Barnsley.
Yeah, well, that's true. Can I, on that one, Steve, I was going to say, backing you boys up there, I was going to go but all the way back to 93. I was very interested listening to Jamie George and his interview after the game on Saturday. He wasn't pretending. They weren't mealy-mouthed words when he was talking about the honour he felt for himself and his family being a Lions captain. And that's something I think dipped away a little bit, but Gatland has brought that back. And it took me back to 93 when, I don't know, three games or so, I captained the Lions. And in those days, it was perceived as something bigger than any of the nations. And as an honour, it was immense, and it isn't something you forget. And I listened to Jamie George, and I think in this professional age, somehow Warren Gatland has been able to bring this back to the boil. And I was very impressed, not just with what he said, but the fact that it suggested to me the Lions do have a real hardcore solidarity going into the series.
We started this chat talking about the football, and that it struck me last week with a lot of the comments, a lot of the things written about a player like Connor Cody, who the Wolves defender, who didn't kick a ball in the tournament, but was being singled out by the coaching staff as one of the most important members of that squad, that England football squad, because he put aside any disappointment that he had in not playing and was a leader in the changing room and on the training pitch and helped carry the team through to where they got to. And that I remember listening to Southgate talk about that and thinking that's exactly what Warren Gatland needs of senior players in South Africa if they don't end up in that test team.
Correct.
Alex, just tell me, you've been covering England for the last 2 weeks. So we've already had Marcus Smith sent out here. Who would be the next person to have put their hand up? Obviously, it depends on who gets injured, but who struck you as a real mover?
Sam Underhill's. Well, I guess the context of it is very much the same as what you've been talking about on the South Africa tour. England played the United States and Canada, neither of whom were at full strength, and cruised to victories. They were England were improved against Canada in that they didn't sort of chip over their own feet, if you like. They just kept accelerating away, hit 70 points, and then Marcus Smith got taken off to be told what everyone else in the stadium knew by that point, which was he was heading off to South Africa. So again, absolute judgments on the performances of individuals are tricky, which Eddie Jones himself has said. He'll be judging it as much on the month in training camp as Warren Gatland will with the Lions. But, I mean, on the evidence of what we saw at Twickenham over 2 weeks, Sam Underhill just looked like he was a class above everyone else on the field, I thought. Looked like a player who's graced a World Cup final. Looked like a player who was unfortunate not to be on a Lions tour in the first place. So a back row injury, I'd say Sam Underhill would be in prime form and prime position to get that call up. And then of the others who, maybe not in a Lions context, but who would be at the top of the list to break into the senior England squad for the autumn when the box are due to come to Twickenham with the Wallabies. Smith, obviously. Harry Randall started both games ahead of Dan Robson and played with a sort of a zip and brought some of his personality to England, which was nice to see. Joe Hayes at tight head. Ellis Genge had a very strong two games against, especially against Canada. He had his man on toast, but showed leadership, stepped up into a senior role. And Freddie Stewart, the Leicester fullback, had a particularly good against the United States. Wasn't tested in the same way against Canada. But the thing about Smith that I liked in that Canada game, even before we got wind that he was coming out to South Africa, and then afterwards for the 20 minutes, 25 minutes he was on the field in the second half, at which point we knew he was heading off to Heathrow straight after the game. So I watched him avidly for that period. We're used to Marcus Smith's fireworks. We're used to him producing a rabbit out of the hat. We're used to him playing like electrifying rugby, because that's what has propelled Harlequins to to the title. What he did on Saturday was just really intelligent, composed, knitted everything together. England were dominant; that they overpowered the Canadians, and they were too quick for them out wide. And he just played this really intelligent game that just played to England's twin strengths in those two areas. And it wasn't a game that he needed to go and win on his own. And I thought he did it really, really smartly. And then we heard that he's off to South Africa, and as the closest like-for-like replacement for or cover for Finn Russell. And I guess he's not, is he even officially part of the touring squad yet? Is he still there as cover rather than an embedded member of the squad? The RFU were told on Friday that he would be needed, and he then played Saturday and flew Saturday night. If he'd flown Friday night, he might have been on the bench for this game.
Yeah, and what would have happened if he got injured on Saturday? I think we're yet to discover. But did the Lions ask for him to come quicker or to be withheld from that England game?
We don't know. We don't know that yet. It's a very, very good question, because if they knew on Friday they needed him, you could imagine Warren wanting him out in South Africa as soon as possible, and you can totally see Eddie wanting him to play in this game because they'd spent the week preparing with Smith at fly half. Certainly the RFU did not want the news coming out at half-time of England-Canada. They knew on Friday. Marcus Smith was not told by the England management until he got pulled off the pitch in the second half. I think the plan was that an announcement would be made after the Lions match on Saturday, but it came out early, much to the frustration of the RFU. But actually, I thought it made for a beautiful moment.
Can I just ask about the USA? Alex, you said that they were short of players. I was very interested in the USA because I thought, I know they were missing AJ McGinty, but I thought with ML Major League Rugby and people coming through, they would be better. Are you saying they didn't have a full side out?
No, I think they're in a position where they had some newer players. Certainly Canada were. I mean, they brought in a whole load of new players. Those two teams are effectively preparing to play World Cup qualifiers against each other in the near future. So yeah, they missed AJ McGinty, but the Americans played, yeah, they, with real kind of vigor and determination. And when England were setting the bench on in the third quarter of that match and just lost their way, the Americans put four tries past them. It was the most points they've ever scored against England, and they made a real fist of it. And I think they left that game with real credit, as we discussed last week, with real credit. But it was partly to do with England sort of losing their way a bit in that third quarter. Canada were a different kettle of fish. They were blooding a lot of new players and were horribly outclassed.
Going back to that Marcus Smith thing, I don't think they're going to take him to South Africa and not give him game time. I think he's almost certainly going to be bench duty at the weekend. And I think Warren Gatland will be interested to see whether he can, in 20 minutes or so, provide a like-for-like, as he described him, with Finn Russell, which is interesting. And he brings players into game. And the question that was asked of Alex about players back home who could sort of spring out for the Lions, I'll give you two other ones. Wales, Aaron Wainwright, who was really good against a strong Argentine side. There's a history of back row forwards like Ryan Jones coming out late, Navidi already, and doing well if there's an injury. And on the England perspective, Joe Thokunasinghe has looked absolutely leaden-footed at Bath for a while. He played with Marcus Smith, coming off his shoulder, stomping down the wing. He looked like the big Joe that excited us all so much. And I'd love, you know, if there's an injury, the land of the Giants, send big Joe there. You know, if Doohan, for example, was to get injured, he would be a classic like-for-like replacement. He was very impressive. And the way England's wingers played off Smith, Radwan and him, hugely impressive.
Yeah, I agree with that about Big Joe. He has looked leaden-footed for Bath, but largely because he's played no rugby and he spent most of his time since the World Cup trying to recover from injuries. We did a ruck pod with him during lockdown after he just had his knee operation, in which he revealed that for the first time since he was in the London Irish Academy, he was able to do a full squat. He's been hampered by physical ailments, and he now looks happy on the field. He looks like he's he's ready to kick on again and play and reach that potential that we saw Barnsley. He, you know, he's playing with a smile on his face. He's playing like he enjoys his rugby. He's been put into holes and used brilliantly by a fly half, and that's good news for England and horrible news for defenders if he can carry on now on that upward arc that he does appear to be back on.
Credit to Eddie Jones here, because if you looked at his Bath form, he wouldn't be anywhere near an England team, even with some of their players with the Lions. But Jones has gone not for the current club form, but he's gone for what he believes. And Fokunasinghe has rewarded him. And he's, I think, at the very least, he's right back banging contention in the England squad.
Jonesy, when was the last time you did a full squat?
What's the time now? Just before we came on. Yeah.
So I had to pull Jonesy out of the gym. I caught him doing. I looked more like a semi squat to me.
No, it was a full. It's full squat.
What was that? For those you could go. Yeah.
Okay.
There's a real fitness drive out here in South Africa. Well, there's not many fit Lions, so the call-ups are just around the corner.
We might see, if we don't see you in the paper on Thursday morning, we'll know it's because you've been called up onto the bench on Wednesday night.
Yeah. Tonight, boys, we got a choice of restaurants tonight, so it's a red letter day. We may even have we can have alcoholic drink, can we? We can't have an alcoholic drink, but we may have a bite to eat and go out. It's going to be amazing.
What are the options, Steve?
Oh, I went when there was a good one nearby where I went with you and Miles on a previous tour. But no, I think the restaurants are open. The president said last night the restaurants are open. The options for drink are basically you find some fool coming down from Heathrow and he secretes 46 bottles of wine in his case. I'm not mentioning any names, but so every new person who comes in has paid 400 quid excess baggage.
Yeah, you're not allowed in without a vineyard in your bag.
Yeah. And that's the way it's been. But look, they're also struggling with COVID here, and also with Mr. Zuma, so it's a real struggle for him and the box. But you've got to keep on going and keep body and soul together.
Well, you keep touring on, gents. We'll all watch the Lions play midweek and look forward to gathering back here again on Thursday for our next midweek episode of the International Ruck. Good to see you guys sitting out there in the sunshine, Barnsley. Good to see you live from your house, and thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll be back here on Thursday.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.